to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Welcome everyone. This is Ladies of Liverpool with Tumbletown in Norris Green. Do find them on Instagram, on Facebook and Twitter as well. Tumbletown with events going on all the time. So don't miss out. Get your kids there. Perfect for the little ones 5 years and under. Well, this week, you're going to meet a lady called Katie Walker. She first came on my radar many years ago with a simple post she put on Facebook that went viral. Something I hadn't seen anybody write. Very honest, very true, very real, and quite disturbing. Find out her story. What happened to Katie Walker that meant her whole life in just one night flipped upside down? She's been left with emotional scars as well as physical. She's going to tell you everything right now, and maybe it's going to get you thinking about your own relationship, or you'll hear some things that maybe make you question relationships around you. Can you help someone close to you? Katie Walker is going to tell us everything we need to know.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
I think we need to start this podcast off by saying it nearly didn't happen. Just as I'm getting ready to prepare for today's podcast, last night I get a message. Katie's back in the hospital. She's got infections in plates that have been placed in her face to rebuild it after she was a victim of abuse.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't even know where to begin with this, so I'm going to go right to the start. So Katie, talk me through 9 years ago, or before that, what was happening in your life to lead up to these events? How did it start?
I think I had just a normal life, really. And I was looking, I've had, you know, a few relationships in the past that haven't worked out. And I think I was just really looking to settle down with somebody. All my friends around me were settling down. And this person came into my life and seemed to sweep me off my feet. And it just seemed like everything that I wanted in life was happening. And I didn't realise that I was actually cut off from my family around me. You know, he made me feel like it was just us two, but I was fine with that. And I didn't realise how much I cut myself off.
Yeah. I've heard about things like this, and it's always done in a really sneaky way. So yeah, you're totally oblivious to what's going on. Looking back now, just to clarify in people's brains, if they're questioning their own relationships, can you pinpoint certain things that happened that made you take a step away from your friends and your families to leave you wide open to what eventually happened?
Looking back now, I can, but at the time I had no idea. I think I just thought that we was in this really good relationship and it was just the two of us. And I also didn't know, like, the signs to look out for in a controlling relationship. But when I had my first session of counselling, it was crazy to think, to realise sort of how he manipulated me and how he sort of controlled me. And even when they were saying to me, you was in a controlling relationship, I was telling them, no, I wasn't. It was really, I had a really good relationship.
Is there something that you look back and go, that was a prime example of how he got me isolated?
Yeah,
how
definitely.
He got me away from everyone.
I had a really good relationship. I've always had a good relationship with my mum. And he started saying things like, when I wanted to spend time with my mum, he'd say, well, your mum doesn't like me, so why would you want to spend time with somebody who didn't like me? And I had an idea that my mum didn't like me, but didn't like him, but I didn't know why. So I sort of like took his side and was like, well, yeah, I don't understand why she doesn't like you, because I thought he was the bee's knees. So
he's playing like the victim in some way.
Yeah.
You know, well, you've
got to support
me. He was
always playing the victim.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to take my side. You've got to choose between your family or your friends and me.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And to everyone listening now, you're thinking, that's so stereotypical. But when you love someone,
oh yeah, you've got no reason to doubt what they're saying. No. You've got no reason to doubt that anything that they do for you is not for the for your best interest and for your relationship. So,
when did you start seeing cracks then in the relationship?
I think there was only really one point where I did think to myself, oh, you know, I'm not sure if this is sort of what I want. And that was when we'd been out to Manchester and we'd had a good night. We were staying over in a hotel and he was really, I thought he was just drunk at the time, but he started getting really aggressive for no reason. And he didn't lay a finger on me, but he did throw an iron in the hotel. And I can remember when we got back to the hotel, but we had both been drinking, but I was thinking to myself, you know, I need to get out of this room. I need to go home and get away from him. But then I sort of, when you wake up in the morning, you sort of, it's all a bit blurry, isn't it? So you think, oh, maybe we were both really drunk and it was just an argument.
Make
and
excuses.
You do, because you don't...
Because we've all done things in drink where the next day you go, oh, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Yeah. We've all woken up with that guilt, haven't we, the next day about something.
That's it. And you don't know whether you'd think, oh, God, I was drunk. Maybe I said something to cause this.
Yeah. Is that enough of a reason to leave someone I really love? Because, you know, they got angry and threw something. They didn't hate me.
Yeah.
So, you know... Maybe I'm being overdramatic. You just go round in circles, don't you? And then eventually a day came when something happened that you couldn't ignore.
We did sort of like part ways for a little bit, and then he sort of got a job, and it was like he was really proving to me that he wanted like the relationship, and he wanted to us both to do well and go somewhere in life.
Yeah, he's doing all the right things.
Yeah,
and so he's got your attention again.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. It made me feel really excited about the relationship again, and then. It was his work's day out to the race, to Chester Races. So we went there, we were having a really good time. You know, probably one of the best times that we'd had, the best days we'd had in our relationship, really, because we were around loads of people. And we'd got the train back to Liverpool, still having a really good time, having a laugh on the train. And then he'd said to me that it was his friend's, girlfriend's birthday. So do we want to go into town to meet them up for a few drinks? And I was like, yeah, it was really early. It was only about 6 or 7 o'clock. So we went to meet them.
Yeah.
I felt quite sober at the time.
Yeah.
But he started really, when we got to Liverpool, he started acting really drunk and trying to fight with the doorman and trying to fight with people around him. And I didn't understand why he was acting like this. I was thinking, oh, maybe he's just drunk. He needs to give it a rest.
And sometimes it does hit people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They can only have a certain amount and then they just lose the plot.
That's it.
And really, they shouldn't drink. I think it just doesn't work for some people, does it?
Yeah, but I sort of didn't understand, like, was he drunk as well? Because we hadn't really seemed to have drank that much, so I didn't really get it. But I said to his friends anyway, should we go back to mine, like, carry on the night there? Because it was really early still. So we got in a taxi and he was kicking off with the taxi driver and we got back to mine and I'd locked the front door to keep him in the house because I didn't want him kicking off on the neighbours.
Yeah.
So I'd locked the front door. And we were sat in the garden. It was the summer, so me and his friend's girlfriend were sat in the garden, and he was like punching walls and stuff. So his friend was trying to calm him down, and we were just sat in the back. And I was thinking, oh, we'll just calm down in a minute. And then his friends had said to him, you need to calm down because you're scaring the girls. And then he just came out into the garden and just stood over me and started screaming, "Oh, am I scaring you?" And then just punched me off my chair.
In front of all his friends?
In front of his friends and his friend's girlfriend, yeah. Punched me off the chair. And I can remember just, like, lying on the floor with me head, like, on the ground in my arm, just thinking, because he was still screaming, shouting over me, screaming.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself, if you don't look at him and just ignore him, then he'll stop. Because I didn't really know what was going on.
Dead. You can't antagonise him if you're not looking
at him. Your body just freezes. I never thought I'd react like this, but my body just froze and I just thought, don't move.
What about the people around you? What were they doing?
I it was just that much of a blur that I can't really even remember.
You can't remember them shouting and screaming or trying to get hold of them?
No, nothing at all. I know that after it all happened and we were sat with the police, this is later on, that his friends had said he thought he was in that frame of mind that he would have grabbed a knife from the kitchen. And I thought after, and it made me really think, but then that's the last contact I had with his friends, so I got no answers to that as to why he would think he would act like that, because I would have no idea that he was that type of person.
No. After he's hit you the one time?
So after he's hit me the one time, no. I can't remember anything. He kicked me in the face and I can't remember any of the, like, how many times he kicked me. I actually told the police it was only one punch and one kick, but the police and the hospital were adamant from the injuries that I had that he must have kicked me around like a football. I can remember being dragged by his friend's girlfriend. I woke up and she was screaming, dragging me across the garden to sort of saying, we need to get out. But she was absolutely hysterical. So what she'd seen in that moment, I've got no idea, but I woke up wondering what's going on and she was hysterical. So then he's still in the house because I'd locked us in. So I sort of woke up
Have you got the key on you at this point?
No, I'd hid it in a shoe.
So you're the only one who left
door.
Everyone else?
Yeah.
But you're obviously somewhere else. You've been booted all over the place,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, when I was first getting, like, the flashbacks, that's how I've pieced it together, is from flashbacks that's happened, and it's like, it was like a horror film when I was thinking of the flashbacks, when I got these flashbacks, because I can remember going to the front door with his friend's girlfriend and we're trying to, like, find the key because I'd stashed it in one of the shoes, but I'd been unconscious, so I wasn't with it.
Yeah.
And the blood is pouring from my face and was slipping on the blood on the floor trying to get out, and he's still in the house. So it was just...
And he's just pacing around the house ready to go in.
He must have been upstairs somewhere, I don't know, but I just knew he was in the house because there was no way of him getting out.
The fear I feel just listening to this story, for you to tell it, can't be easy. Do you go through all those emotions every time you speak about it, or are you starting to become almost immune to the words?
Yeah, I think, like, as I'm talking now about it, like, my body freezes up inside a little bit, but I'm not. I used to get really emotional talking about it because, for obvious reasons, but now I think what has helped me, like, deal with it is talking about it, and I know for a fact the more I talk about it, the more I'm helping others, really. So that's what I'm trying to sort of promote now, is helping women to get a voice to speak out, and that will help you down the line, really.
Ladies of Liverpool.
So taking a deep breath and trying to understand what's going on in that moment in time. You're surrounded by blood, your own blood. Your face, we know now, has been completely caved in at this point.
Well, I didn't really, at the time, I didn't realise what had happened because I'd been unconscious. And it's so weird looking back on it, but in my head, I just got a new phone, and all I was thinking was, I need to find my phone.
Yeah.
After we'd opened the front door, for some reason, I ran next door but one to my neighbours, and I think it was about 11 o'clock at this point.
Yeah.
I knocked on my neighbour's door. I don't even know why I'd ran there, and she'd opened the door and she'd shut it straight away on me. So she must have looked at me and just been
terrified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she shut the front door, and then as I was knocking, he ran past me then. Ran down the road, and his friends had run after him. So we went back into the house, and the police immediately were there straight away. Yeah. In a matter of minutes, they were there.
And who called the police?
Well, the neighbours out the back had heard the screaming.
Right.
And they'd called them. Mm. So we went into the house, and I can remember looking around thinking, God, my house is trashed. What has even happened? I had no idea.
Yeah.
But all's in my mind, I just wanted to find my phone for some reason. I don't think I'd not realised what has happened.
Yeah.
And the
must
police.
Like a coping mechanism as well. You've zoned in on something.
Yeah, and I think it was denial. I didn't want to realise what has happened as well. I didn't want to think that this person had done this to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the police, they were amazing, the police. And they were helping me find the phone. I can remember them. Like sitting me down and being like, no, we can find your phone for you. And then they found it, sat me down on the couch, and they were like, okay, you need to come to hospital now. And I was like, no, I'm fine. I don't need to go to hospital. They were asking me what had happened. And I was still trying to protect them. I told them that after we'd been to town, we just brought some random people back to the house and a fight had broke out.
Yeah.
And I think looking back now, they must have been looking at me and being like, you know, we're not soft sort of thing, but they're really well trained to deal with these situations. Mm-hmm. And they just sat me down and they just said, you know, take a deep breath. You need to just look in the mirror. Because I thought I'd just had like a broken nose or, you know, a black eye. And they just said, you need to just look in the mirror. And when I looked in the mirror, like my jaw was literally on the other side of my face. Like it was just looked crazy straight away. Yeah. So
and you think of the police, and they're called out to domestic abuse or domestic situations all the time.
Yeah.
It's so common. And they'll get there and they'll see certain things. Even for those police officers who were trained to deal with awful situations, to see what you saw in the mirror.
Yeah.
They must have just been totally shocked as to what they're going to do, especially if you're saying, wasn't them.
Yeah.
Wasn't him, someone else.
I think they knew straight away. And And when they were asking me who had done it, and I told them this, you know, made this story up, and then they were looking around the house and they'd found a letter with his name on it. And they were saying, is this the person that's done it to you? And I was like, no, no, no. And then they said, well, we've just arrested this person down the road with blood on him. So, and he actually punched a police woman in the face as well when he got arrested. So it was, so they knew straight away that it was him.
So from this point then, you go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And the thing I find about this story is you often hear of situations like this and they build. So it starts with, you know, they get verbally abusive, or they do abusive things, mental abuse.
Yeah.
And then it gradually goes from a smack or, you know, a punch, and then it builds and builds and builds. You've gone from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
In one day.
Yeah.
So how you get your head around that, I'll never know, and I imagine it's still a battle now. You go from the house to the hospital, and what do they tell you? What's the verdict on your, the state of the way your face is?
Well, I just went into A&E, and they were like, we will do some x-rays and stuff, and I was not really with it. I can't really remember most of the night. I can't remember going for the x-rays or anything. I don't know if they just put me on morphine straight away.
Yeah.
But I can remember it got to 4 o'clock in the morning, and the nurses came in and they said, we've got the results back of your injuries. You've got broken nose, 2 broken eye sockets, 2 broken cheekbones, fractures to the skull, broken jaw, and I just remember lying there, because I don't remember feeling any pain, or I just remember lying there thinking, oh God, I'd better phone my mum, because I wasn't even going to ring her. So I just remember saying, oh, I think I need to phone my mum.
Do you know, at this point, I am literally taking your story on here and thinking, how do you tell your mum that someone's done this to you? And as a mum and as a daughter, whether you're the mum or you're the daughter, they can't fix it.
No.
They can't turn back time. They can't make it so it ends a different way. You're totally powerless. And for your mum to take that phone call.
Well, my mum's a nurse as well. Mm. So the nurse has phoned my mum. And I think it must have been when she was getting up for work that she, you know, seen all the missed calls. And it wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't until like years and years after it that I started like seeing it from my mum's side, mm-hmm. and thinking, you know, I've always said I actually don't regret anything that happened, because I think it's made me the person that I am today. But
and
what
you
I do
have
regret
predicted that was going to happen that night.
No,
for some girls, this is part of life.
Yeah,
where they end up coming to terms with it and staying, whether it's for the kids, whether it's because that mentally they're just exhausted or they've got nowhere to go and nowhere to turn. This just happens almost out the blue for you.
Yeah, but I think the crazy thing is that if the injuries weren't as bad and if he didn't go to jail, I'd have stayed with him even after this happens.
That's an important point, isn't it?
I would have. Mm. It's just like,
you would have forgiven him.
I would have forgiven him. Even I had to go in to get more surgery done on my face, and he was due in court, and I had the surgery, I had to get my face reconstructed, and then a couple of months later, my face collapsed, and I went back into the hospital, I think it was on the Wednesday, and they were like, you need to come in for emergency surgery, like, we need to do this now. And he was due in court on the Friday, and I wanted to go to the court to make sure that he was okay. And I was trying to tell them that I wasn't going in to get the surgery, because I needed to go to the court to make him make sure that he was okay, and my face was collapsed.
Now, for everyone listening to this story, you can't get your head around that.
No.
But you're saying it just sat up straight, as plain as day. That's how you felt in that moment. And that's something important, I think, we all need to understand, that you don't know how you're going to react. And you can say, I do this and I do that and I wouldn't do that. We don't know.
No.
And I bet now you're just as shocked saying that out loud.
Yeah,
because it makes no sense
that I would have like not gone, especially like the person that I am. I've always worked in the hair and beauty industry. I love doing my makeup, and
we're all,
you know,
vain,
I've always been a bit
we?
Vain, yeah. And to think that I was gonna, you know, have the possibility of my face never going, the bones never being the same as what they were again.
The
to support the man who
did it to you.
I just can't believe it. But it's just how you feel at that time.
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool. Everything for ladies.
Let's talk then about the whole rebuild of your gorgeous face. So what did that involve? How long did it take to get you looking as beautiful as you look today?
They're very good, the surgeons.
Gosh. You hear what actually was broken? There was not much left to your face.
No, it was quite scary. Like, I had to sign forms to say, you know, they can reconstruct the eye socket. It was in that many. They didn't know how to do it. They had to get all. I had to wait for all the top surgeons to get together to decide how they are going to put it back together again. And I had to sign a form to say that we can do this, but there's a chance that you could go blind. There's a chance that your eyeball could drop. And if that happens, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. So it was scary. And, you know, being somebody who's always being quite vain and like doing my hair and makeup and stuff and not recognising myself, that was, I never thought my face was going to go back to normal ever again.
So how long were you looking in the mirror and you didn't? I've seen photographs, which we will put online, so do check out ladiesliverpool.com. I've seen the photographs. How long until you actually looked like you again? Or
I think it took a good year for all the swelling and stuff to go down.
And the surgery, how long did that go on for?
Well, at the time, it was like 3 months on and off, but then I've had 3 or 4 surgeries since then as well, just from plates going infected and things.
So 9 years later, you're still being treated?
Yeah.
9 years later, you're still getting infections, problems with the plates that have been put in your face to rebuild it, to give it the same shape again.
Yeah.
As wonderful as it is and everything those surgeons have done is just unbelievable,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, they're amazing.
The miracle
amazing.
Workers. But even now, you're still week to week going through what happened that one night 9 years ago.
Yeah, I think the only good thing about it is that I've changed me frame of mind into thinking, okay, this has happened, but every time something does happen, I'm using that to sort of show women that I'm still going through this and you could still go through this in the future, yeah, but life's still going to be better.
Yeah.
And I'm using it to sort of put fire in my belly to help other women.
So the counselling you went through, how are you still going through that now? Was it just immediate after the event?
Yeah, I only did it. No, I was on a waiting list for about 8-9 months and I only ended up doing 2 sessions of it.
Did it work?
Because
honestly,
for me personally, it didn't work at all because, you know, I felt like the girl who was doing it, a lovely girl, but I felt like she didn't understand at all what I was going through because you could tell that she's not been through it. Yeah. It was in like an old church and it just didn't feel like a relaxed environment where I want to open up about.
And so when
anything.
You went into these sessions, they were asking you to talk about what happened, what you can remember.
Well, I had to go right back to the start of anything happening in my life and deal with all that first before I'd even brought this up. And on the second session, I went back to my house, blocked all the windows with paper, newspaper, shut all the doors. And I thought that even though he was in jail, I thought somebody was outside my house trying to get me. And I literally didn't leave the house for about 2 or 3 days afterwards because I was just having panic attacks. And it's just bringing up all these old feelings and memories. And
the fear must have just been off the scale. Yeah. Or, you know, as you say, even months and years later.
Well, let's move to a different part of Liverpool as well, thinking that if I move somewhere where nobody knows me, then it's going to be better. And it wasn't, it was worse.
So your whole life's upside down.
Yeah.
He goes to court, he does time, I imagine. How long did he
It was supposed to be attempted murder. Then it got dropped straight away to a section 18, which is wounds and with intent. And when he got arrested the night, he pleaded guilty to a section 20, which is wounds and without intent. And when it went to court, I didn't help the situation. And looking back now, I was daft, really, because I told them it was just one punch and just one kick. And, you know, I think if we hadn't been drinking, he'd never have done this to me. And everything that you say when you're trying to protect someone.
Is brief, yeah, as wanted you to say.
Exactly, yeah.
You played right into the hands.
And I wasn't even going to give a statement. It was my mum who was...
true love, isn't it? Just when you love someone and you still, even at that point, trying to protect them.
And you don't realise what happens as well, like, because you don't feel any pain. You don't. I'm in hospital on morphine and I'm confused and I don't know why you do it and I'm still trying to protect them. So... Yeah. I was worried about him at the time. And that's the whole control that they've got over you. You know, even though he'd never laid a hand on me in the relationship, he'd still worked on controlling me and got my mind all about him.
Yeah. It's powerful stuff, Katie.
It is. But he got 5 years for what he did to me and he got 3 months for what he did to the police officer.
And he did 2.5 years.
He did 2.5 years.
How does that make you feel? Do you feel that for what, 9 years later, you're still going through and everything that happened, do you feel that's about right?
It's really hard.
Because I don't, I'll be honest. I'm shocked at that.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that someone can do that to a person, leave them with the jaw hanging off the face and a face that needs completely rebuilding with metal plates for a life then to be turned upside down where they can't even live in the home they were living in, the job, everything goes on hold. I find that hard to swallow, I'll be honest.
I think it more sort of hit me when, after 2.5 years, I moved back into my mum's house because I just couldn't cope on my own. And after 2.5 years, the police came to my mum's house and they sat us down and said, he's due to get out of jail today. We don't think he's changed. He's not fooling anyone, but he's done his time. So we just have to keep you as safe as we can. And they put cameras up around my mum's house that day. And I'd done a lot to try and move on with this over the past 2.5 years.
Back to square one with that, don't
you? Just felt like I'd just gone back to normal. And I felt like even worse because I thought, well, he is coming to get me then if they're trying to put cameras up.
Something's been said.
He obviously knows that they know something's going to happen. And that just made it...
Did you ever see him again?
I've never seen him. I think... In my head, I think I've seen him a couple of times, but then when I actually, you know, with the panic attacks, when I actually sit down and like think about it rationally, I don't think it was him. I think it's my mind playing tricks.
And did you ever get to the bottom of why he just all of a sudden started having these violent episodes? Was there a reason? Was he taking drugs? Was it?
No, I think when I asked myself that question for a long time afterwards and in the end, I realised I was torturing myself by asking it because I'm never, ever going to get the answers to why it happened.
He might not even know.
And I think,
if you asked him.
Yeah. And I think I just decided one day to just stop asking myself these questions. And I sort of felt free when I stopped asking myself why, because he's still controlling me then. While I'm asking all these questions why he did it, I feel like he's still got a part of my life. Yeah. And I think that's why I was very angry at the start because he only got 5 years. I was very angry when he got out of jail after the 2.5 years, but now that I've changed my mindset on not thinking about him, I actually couldn't care less how long he got, because you are not no concern to my life anymore, and I don't care for
girls,
you
so. Listening now, I know that there are who are going through things like this, because it's just too common. The police tell us it happens so often. And we just need to get the word out there that you're not alone.
Exactly.
For starts.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not to blame. No matter what you're being told, this is not on you. This is on them. And you need support. And there are places that you can go and get it, which leads us on to the amazing work that you're doing as a result of this awful, awful time that you've been through.
Ladies of Liverpool.
So you're the first person to stand up and say, you've had help, you've had support, and you've managed to create, almost finish off creating something that is going to make a huge difference in this city. Talk to me about Katie Cares.
So, at the minute we are renovating 2 floors above my salon into a domestic abuse centre, and I'm sort of taking everything that I've been through and just in my life and combined with the hairdressing, I'm putting a bit of a twist on the counselling, really, and just doing it a little bit different, which I think I've already done it in the salon. So I opened my salon in 2013 through the Prince's Trust. And I, even though this was supposed to be the most amazing time of my life, it's my dream, it's what I've always wanted to do. I was still struggling with panic attacks and flashbacks in the salon. And I was in the salon and I thought that my ex was standing outside. And I think it was just somebody who looked, I don't even think it was him, but it just triggered something off in my mind. And I had a panic attack in the back of the salon. And I remember thinking, I just can't, this is ridiculous. I can't, this is supposed to be the happiest time of my life. I can't keep doing this.
So
I
your gut's telling you that as much as this was always your passion,
yeah,
maybe your passion lies somewhere else.
Yeah, I think I hadn't told anybody what has happened to me at this point. I didn't, even the Prince's Trust didn't know what has happened to me. But and I just felt like I needed to take, like, it got to the time, it would get to springtime, going into summertime, and the smell of grass would trigger off these panic attacks. And it was all like, I got to learn what started triggering them to be able to control them, but they were still happening. So I felt like I needed to do something to take control back of my life. And to also, I thought, if I could share my story on the day that it happened and it helped one person, it's turning for me like a negative day into a positive day. And I'll always look back at that day with positive thoughts instead of negative ones.
This isn't the day this happened. This is the day when I made a change.
Yes. That's it. And so in 2015, that's when I shared my story on Facebook. And it was so scary just pressing like share, because I didn't know what response I was going to get. And I shared all the pictures and I just thought, just get it out there and just...
Now, I saw that. That's when you first came on my radar.
Oh, really?
All those years ago, I saw that. Someone I know must have shared it onto their page. And I remember I saw that and a group of my mates all talking about it. And you obviously hit a nerve with people who, thankfully, none of us have been through it. We haven't felt what you felt, but you hit a nerve with us still. So for the ladies which you were aiming it at, who have been through it or were going through it at that time or were struggling to get over it, what a service to say, you're not alone, contact me.
Yeah.
Speak to me, let's get through it together.
Yeah.
That's something that I hadn't seen up until that point on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or on any social media. It's more common now, you see it now.
Yeah.
That yours is the first time I ever saw someone just open up and say, this is how bad it is.
Yeah, I'd never really seen anybody sharing it before. And I just thought, it's so easy to share things on social media because you're not in front of somebody speaking. And it just, for me, seemed like the right thing to do at the time.
But like you say, you do expect the backlash because there are so many lunatics on social media.
Well, I was so scared because what I didn't know if my ex was going to see the post.
Yeah. Or someone he knows and then they pass it on to somebody else.
I was overwhelmed by the response of...
Just positive.
Positive, but also women who were going through it, who were struggling. Like, I couldn't believe how many women and men were actually dealing with this themselves. I was still in the relationship. I've got out and it's been absolutely years and they're still struggling. Mm-hmm. But a lot of praise as well off women to say, you know, you've given me positive thoughts, something to, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel, really.
Do you come across many men who've been through it?
I've had a good few men message me.
Cause this is sort of a trend at the moment where men are feeling more confident to step up and say, it's not just women going through this.
Yeah, definitely. I think with men, it seems to be like a different type of control, really, with it's not... I mean, I can't really... I'm just talking from what I've been through and from a women's point of view. Yeah. But it does seem to be it's more like mental, emotional with men. And I think a lot of men won't even realise that they're in a controlling relationship because it's not something that they'd ever think that they would. But
the young girls who are controlling the boys.
Yeah.
And then you hear about the boys who are getting the girls to send nude pictures of themselves and then they're holding them to ransom.
Yeah.
If you don't do what I say, I'm going to share this picture around.
You know, the young ones are finding themselves being controlled or controlling because it is so easy to post something of somebody.
Yeah.
And I don't think they actually realise. I've been going into schools and colleges and just doing talks to raise awareness for what it is because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And it's not something... over the past 2 years, I think it's got a lot better with teaching children domestic abuse, but we need to break that cycle, because children, you know, as young as 5 and 6 are seeing their parents being abusive towards each other, and then they're growing up and thinking that that's, they've not been taught that, no, actually, that's not acceptable to behave like that.
You had this time of the year when you go down, you'd feel really down because it would remind you of what happened on that day. So on that same day, you post your message on Facebook.
Yeah.
And everything turns around. And Katie Cares starts to take shape.
Well, yeah, I started after seeing how much women needed support, especially in Walton, where the salon is. Like, it's got one of the highest rates in the country of domestic abuse. And I think that's why I got so much feedback from it, because it was women from the local area.
Yeah.
So I started just offering a free pamper in the salon for women who've been through it. Just, I just feel like when you've had your hair done, you can take the world on, and you just feel so amazing. And it's like, you know, your nan used to say, you get up and you put your lippy on. It's like your armour, isn't it?
Yeah. And I don't know whether this was your intention as well, but if you've got a lady in your chair who knows you've been through something because you've publicly put it out there, she's more likely in that chair to tell you things.
Yeah.
I tell my hairdresser everything.
That's it, yeah. It's a comfort thing.
So you've got them in a real safe environment where they can talk to you, knowing that you understand, where you felt your counsellor didn't understand.
Yeah.
They know you understand.
Yeah.
And you're sending them out feeling good about themselves.
Yeah, it just sort of, it all just fell into place, really, when I didn't share my story expecting anything what happened afterwards to happen. I did it sort of to raise awareness, but then to help me basically deal with it. And everything that's happened afterwards has just fit into place so perfectly, because when you've been in a controlling relationship, you're stripped bare of all your confidence, your self-worth, everything. You've got nothing. You feel so... There it is. You just feel awful.
Vulnerable,
that's it, yeah. You don't feel like you've got anything to live for whatsoever. And that's just, you know, making people feel good and making them doing the hair and making them feel confident is a way to start getting women to open up as well. Because I think when you feel confident about yourself, when you've had your hair done, it's easier to talk.
Yeah.
So I started offering just pampers to women who've been through it in the salon, and then I was awarded a Pride of Britain award for the work that I've done through the Prince's Trust. And then since I got that, I've had loads of support to start opening this charity. Like, now I want to take it even further, because I've tried and tested it, and I know that it works from the women I've already helped.
Yeah.
Now we're putting together, you know, we're renovating a whole centre to be able to help, you know, on a wider scale.
So is this an extension of the salon?
Yeah.
This is where the centre's going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be above the salon. So it just feels like you're just walking into a salon. It's really, you know, relaxed and comfortable and just like that atmosphere where it's, we're all women together.
Yeah.
You're safe. You know, if you be in the controlling relationship and you're being followed, and you do come to us to talk, you're just going to look like you're walking into a salon. You're not walking into a centre.
Brilliant. That is brilliant. So you don't even have to come out and tell anybody.
No.
Not even your closest friends. Because a lot of the time people don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
No.
They tell nobody. So if they can walk in somewhere like they're getting their hair done, that's genius.
It's just, it's secret. It's
what an amazing thing for you to come up with. So people have been great and they've been chipping in.
Yeah.
You've just had a kitchen donated, haven't you? That's how much people believe in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Do you want to do a shout out for your kitchen?
Yes, definitely. Big shout out to Magnus, and thank you so much for coming to measure up and fit our kitchen for us.
It's lovely. Cups of teas for all the ladies who need to sit down and chat. And
definitely.
And whether they're going in for a chat to just talk about what's going on and with someone who knows what's happening to them, because it's happened to them, or whether they're coming through those doors to ask someone to get them out of it.
To make the first step at rebuilding the lives.
Maybe they don't know what to do.
No.
And they need someone to say, tell me what to do, without going into an environment that there's paperwork and there's people watching. Just to say to someone, get me out of it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of amazing support out there for when you've first escaped from the relationship. But there doesn't seem to be that much support down the line. And for myself personally, it was like, you know, a couple of years afterwards where I was still struggling and there's no one to turn to mm-hmm. to help you then. Yeah. And I wasn't leaving the house and I needed somebody to just help me, just to get me confidence to go and find another job, to like, even just to go to the shop, just to go to the Asda. You're always looking over yeah. your shoulder and you don't know what, you know.
And you hear about people, they start self-medicating. They'll have a drink just to numb whatever feelings are coming to the surface.
I was going to the doctors and he was just saying antidepressants, sleeping tablets. That's all they kept saying to me and prescribing me. We're going to sign you off sick and give you more sleeping tablets. And I was just like this.
You knew there was something else that could be done here.
I'm not that type of person to sort of, like, I've got a lot of sort of get up and go really. And it was driving me insane that I was feeling like this. Yeah. Knowing that that's not the type of person that I am, I can't sit still most of the time.
Yeah. So Katie Cares, is it ready to open? Is it going to be a couple of months' time that you're going to be seeing people coming through the doors, or is it just a gradual undercover kind of operation?
Yeah, we're getting very close now. I've had amazing support. Two of the trustees are Princess Trust mentors. Yeah. They are absolutely amazing, Neil and Alan. They've helped me deal with all the legal side to get it registered as a charity and all like the important stuff. Mm-hmm. I've been doing all the fundraising to renovate it, really. We had to basically take the whole thing back to brick and we've had to start from scratch. So the past year has just been fundraising to renovate it. We've had a lot of stuff donated. B&Q have donated the toilets and the showers, and we're at the stage now where we've finished all the plastering. Last year we raised £33,000, which is amazing. So we're nearly at the end of the actual renovation. Yeah. We just need a floor. We need to raise some money to get some heating in there, some radiators.
Why she's here. So there's no way you've listened to this podcast and you haven't been moved, possibly to tears, possibly to anger, because I know I've got that little feeling in my belly now where I'm thinking of women going through this, or men. And if you feel moved enough to get involved in some way, it couldn't be easier. If you just literally Google Katie Walker Liverpool, it'll come up with the Just Giving page, the first thing that comes up.
Yeah.
No matter whether it's a pound, 50 Any, pence.
Yeah.
It's all going to make a massive difference if you can help to turn this Katie Cares venue into a place where women are going to be turning up in the droves, and men, to try and find a different ending, to not end up in the state that poor Katie was in. You can help control her. Get involved. Do it. On behalf of everyone listening right now, you are a massive inspiration.
Thank you. My goodness,
woman. You've been through it and you've come out the other side, and that's a lesson in itself.
Yeah, it's definitely about showing women that even though you've been through this, that it's like at the end of the tunnel, you just need to do the first step and just, speak out.
Find the support, find it at Katie Cares and get involved. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.
Huge thank you for listening this week. I think we're all going to be thinking about Katie Walker and her stories for a long time after this podcast ends. Not easy for her to step up and tell her tale, but I think it needed to be said, and I'm very grateful that she chose Ladies Liverpool as a platform to do it. Huge thank you once again to Tumbletown as well and Norris Green. If you haven't checked them out already, please do find Tumbletown on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. And also Katie Walker, say hello to her, tell her you've listened to the podcast and check out all of her up and coming events. She's raising as much money as she can and maybe you can help her out. Thanks again, ladies and gents, for tuning in to Ladies of Liverpool. I'm Leanne Campbell.
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.